uncover less known but not less fascinating stories from New Mexico's incredible history. I'm Laura Love, and this is Lost New Mexico. While looking through my grandma's old scrapbook from the 1920s, I found what looked like some sort of airline ticket with the date written in pencil, July 31st, 1929. Who flew on planes in the 1920s beside Charles Lindbergh and Amelia Earhart? I was curious, to say the least. One day, I noticed the public broadcasting PBS show, Genealogy Roadshow, was asking for submissions from Albuquerque, New Mexico, since they would be in town. I figured, hey, why not try it? Ask the experts as seen on TV. It was worth a shot. After sending a picture of the ticket and the story of my grandmother's mystery on the TV show, and going through several interviews and discussions with genealogy and history experts from the show for several months, they concluded the fact that yes, it was indeed a Texas Air Transport, TAT, passenger airline ticket from 1929. They came to the conclusion that my grandma, Mary Letcher, did take that flight on July 31st, 1929. During the filming of the show, they revealed, from what they could tell from their research, it seemed Grandma flew from Amarillo to Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, to possibly get someone out of jail. Well, I finished filming the story for the show in Albuquerque, but unfortunately, the recorded segment with my grandma's story was left on the cutting room floor when the show aired in 2016. So much for my TV career. But wait, rewind that? What did they say again? She might have taken the flight to get someone out of jail? The PBS researchers left me with that hanging possibility, along with the exuberant encouragement to do more research. They suggested starting with the newspapers of the day. Well, okay. Let's see. What was going on around that time, the late 1920s? So, women were cutting their hair into bobs and dancing the Charleston? Oh, and the fun times of Prohibition were upon us in the United States. Let's not forget that one. Lindy and Amelia were setting records, flying all over the place on these amazing machines called airplanes. But were other people really taking flights too? Well, needless to say, a lot of things were up in the air. It didn't take me long to realize this was my ticket to uncover some incredible lost stories that were flying around during the Roaring Twenties over eastern New Mexico and Texas. And you know what else? I soon learned that no, it wasn't just Lindy and Amelia who were flying the friendly skies. So join me, Laura Love, on this Lost New Mexico episode as we take a trip back to the late 1920s with Mary's ticket. The time period is often referred to as the Jazz Age, where economic prosperity and carefree living set the pace. I promise we'll have a rip-roaring time. All they had to do was watch and wait and wait a little more. The wind was blowing out in the field like it often does in eastern New Mexico. It was chilly, a late November in 1927. The airplane was supposed to land out on a ranch just north of Roswell, New Mexico. It was going to make history. And they were ready, because Juanita knew their little secret. Just then, as expected, the Waco aircraft was spotted. It landed, and the race was on. Driving his car through a pasture and a 5-strand wire fence, Agent Beecham, who had been known in some circles as Otero County's own Elliot Ness, quickly grabs his gun and starts firing. Then, it was over. Thanks to the intel from 20-something U.S. Customs undercover agent Juanita McDaniels, along with some help from her younger sister Thelma, this would go down in history as New Mexico's first booze plane taken down by the Prohibition agents. 5 cases of whiskey and 2 pilots were captured. Images of Juanita McDaniels, Howard Beecham, the plane, and the whiskey posing on the Roswell Ranch can be found on the Lost New Mexico website. This, however, was just the beginning to Juanita's exciting career with airplanes. She must have been paying close attention while working undercover, because by 1929, she had attained her pilot's license and set her sights on making a transatlantic flight. In the meantime, she was caught at the Yuma, Arizona airport for trying to make some extra cash by running 244 pints of liquor from the border. She was arrested, but let go on lack of evidence. In addition, in California, she was noted for being the pilot for finding a lost Western airplane in the San Bernardino Mountains, and also for reaching a new altitude for women pilots. Well, okay. So it seems some groundbreaking things were going on in the air in the 1920s, including women pilots making headlines. At some point, I think I have to do a story on Juanita. But until then, let's circle back around to New Mexico. What was my 22-year-old grandma, Mary, from the little eastern New Mexico town of Tucumcari, doing on a Texas Air Transport plane from Amarillo to Dallas on July 31st, 1929? To get someone out of jail. That possibility kept going around and around in my thoughts. How the PBS researchers came up with that was also a little bit foggy, but if anyone my grandma knew in those days who could have, possibly, been in jail, it would have been her own brother-in-law, Jack North. You see, my grandma's sister, Patsy Letcher, or Paws as she was known, married Jack North in 1926. He apparently was from Iowa. I don't know much about him, and it was a brief marriage, and they had 2 boys. That's really about all I knew. When I asked my mom about the mysterious Uncle Jack, she simply said, "Well, Aunt Pat just couldn't pick men," but refused to elaborate. With that, I decided to look more into good old Uncle Jack to see what I could find out. After some newspaper article searching, I came across an El Paso Herald story dated December 12, 1929, about a daredevil painter and wrangler of flagpoles and smokestacks. It was about Jack North, the steeplejack, and his 2-year-old son, The story featured photos of the father-son duo. The story went on into detail about little Jack Jr. accompanying his dad over 65,000 miles to 15 different states and entering Mexico at 3 different ports. According to the story, little Jack Jr.'s mom had passed away 8 months prior and left dad with little Jack by his side to barnstorm the country for work. But something didn't quite check out. About 2 weeks later, December 27, 1929, the El Paso Herald printed a follow-up to their profile of Steeplejack and his young son with the headline, "Denies Being Dead. Little Jack's Mom, Mrs. Jack North, former Pat Letcher," she notes, from Tucumcari, New Mexico, "wrote a letter stating that she was the mother of the young boy and Jack's wife from the article and was very much alive. She wrote, "I am living in the home of my parents since he, Jack, left me 5 months ago, leaving behind a younger child." Holy smokes! This was good old great Uncle Jack and my Aunt Pat. So let's just quickly look at the timeline here. 5 months prior to the December 1929 articles was around the time of my grandma's flight, which was July 31st. Also, just 2 days before, on July 29th, her sister Pat, Mrs. Jack North, had given birth to a second son, William Joseph North. It seems likely Great Uncle Jack left Tucumcari with 2-year-old Jack Jr., Jackie he was often called, just after the birth of his second son, Baby Bill. Perhaps he fled initially to Dallas, and that's where my Grandma Mary went to track him down, and her little nephew? Apparently, it wasn't very fruitful since months later, in December at least, he was on a Steeplejack tour with little Jackie. Somehow, though, after that article in December 1929, Jackie must have been reunited with his mom in Tucumcari, because things only got worse for Great Uncle Jack. Other records indicate Jack North spent time, well, more specifically did time, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now, keep in mind, the country was well into a depression. Jack was in Dallas, in jail, in April of 1930. Then, newspaper and arrest records show that Jack was also arrested in the summer of 1930, along with 3 others from Irving, Texas, for chicken thievery, and sentenced to a year in the Texas State Penitentiary in Huntsville. Then, in January of 1931, Jack got an early release from Huntsville. Not long after, he was working at the White City nightclub in Fort Worth, Texas. Then, on March 19, 1931, Jack was murdered. According to the Dallas Morning News, a woman companion who apparently had plans of marrying Jack detailed that the fatal shot that killed him was a result of an argument that he had with a man by the name of Bert Jones, who was also working at the nightclub. Jones stated he fired his gun in self-defense after being attacked with a knife. Bert had a small cut, and the knife was found in a stove at the nightclub. Jack's woman companion said the murder all started over a greeting and some spilled coffee. Jack was buried in an unmarked grave in Fort Worth. It seems like a pretty undramatic, sad ending to a man who seemed to live a pretty dramatic life. There is a family document that has the cemetery and final resting spot noted. Bert Jones was indicted for Jack's murder, but in 1932, a Texas court returned a verdict of insanity. Oddly enough, from an examination of X-ray photos, a bullet that had been lodged in Jones's head for 28 years helped the court's decision in the insanity plea. My grandma Mary, as far as I know, never said a word about her 1929 flight, the kidnapping, or the demise of Jack North. I don't even know if my grandfather knew about all of this. They were married in 1930, so did he know she took that flight in 1929? I may never know. She just happened to hold on to that flight ticket and put it in her scrapbook, where it stayed for nearly 100 years. I never knew Jack North's history or how he met my Aunt Pat in rural New Mexico, coming from Iowa. Some family members had heard the possibilities of Jack changing his name to escape from the law from another state, perhaps. That could still be another mystery to solve. Eventually, little Jackie was back with his mom in Tucumcari, as we have some photos of both the young boys in the 1930s. Jackie, apparently sickly a good portion of his life, passed away at the age of 13 with some heart issues. I recently found his death certificate, and he, along with his brother and mom, had been living in Indiana for about 4 years. As I understand, his mom, Pat, had met another man by the name of White, married him, and moved to Indiana, and eventually ended up in Florida. Pat passed away in Florida in 1976 at the age of 70, and my grandmother passed away in 1985 at the age of 77. Bill, the surviving son, never got along with Mr. White, and at a young age he joined the Navy. Pat and my grandma remained in contact with each other nearly all their lives, as I recall seeing ongoing letters being exchanged between them as I was growing up. I also would get to meet Bill on occasion. Bill stayed in contact with my grandmother. Bill passed away in 2014. I had a chance to talk with him just a few months before he passed away. I have also been lucky enough to connect with some of Bill's children, who are around my age. I have established a great friendship with his youngest, Fran, and oldest, John. We have worked together to unravel some of the Letcher family mysteries, and yes, there are more, but that is for another episode. Well, that closes out the story of Mary's ticket, but you can be sure there's more where this came from. Thank you for joining me, Laura Love, and remember to visit the LostNewMexico.com website for additional resources on this story and others. Remember to find Lost New Mexico wherever you get your podcasts.